What's up, everybody? You are now listening to Volume 6 of Hashtag, and I'm joined by Keyote Howard of Scriptly Adapted Uncut as we review and give our reactions to WWE Elimination Chamber. What up, Keyote?
What's going on, Lewis? It's a pleasure to be back, my friend. What's going on?
Yes, I'm excited to have you back. We are 24 hours removed, and I was there in person at the Toyota Center last night.
Yes, sir. Man, you look like you had a good time, man. Had the family out. It looked nice. It looked like a nice time.
Listen, I don't know how the pay-per-view came off on TV, but I had a blast. I had a really good time. It was a very enjoyable event, especially the main event, which we'll get into later. Right. But surprisingly enough, my son, Tate, was into it the whole time. And that's no easy task for a four-year-old.
Well, good for him, man. He's following in Pop's footsteps. You're showing him the way, Lewis. You're showing him the way. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, I would hope. The thing is, he doesn't watch wrestling religiously, and, you know, he's not all that into the product, but he gets excited whenever I watch it or whatever, whenever I'm playing WWE 2K19 on the PS4 and stuff like that, and he's familiar with some of the talent. So he, you know, he's into the Usos. He's well aware of AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, people like that. I put him on to Tommaso Ciampa, nice. Velveteen Dream.
Very nice.
He's familiar people too. But yeah, I mean, apart from a minor incident, which I'll get into, he was good for the majority of the, he didn't even have to go potty, which is awesome.
So you got to sit in your seat the entire show. You got to enjoy it. No interruption. That's fantastic, man. Look at that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and he knows that the Royal Rumble is coming to Houston in 2020, so he's ready.
That's right.
Now, he in the building.
That's right. You're making those plans already, man.
Hell yeah! Those tickets, you know, I'm joking. Come on, the Royal Rumble. You can't pass up on that opportunity.
No, you can't. Especially if it's in your backyard. So you gotta go.
Yeah, and they're doing it for Minute Maid Park, so it's going to be the same stadium-type feel that this past Royal Rumble had in Phoenix.
I think that might be their new thing going forward with the Royal Rumbles. They're starting to do it in ballparks.
Yeah, I like it. I think the Royal Rumble should be regarded as one of their biggest pay-per-views, so therefore it should be in a big stadium-type atmosphere, just like WrestleMania.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah.
Now, what did you think of the pay-per-view overall, if you had to give it a letter grade? Remember, we're coming from two different perspectives, so I'm going to be slightly biased.
Right. So, overall, I enjoyed it. If I had to give it a letter grade, I give it a solid C+. I give it a C+. There was a lot of things to enjoy about it, Lewis. Are we breaking it? Should I tell why I liked it?
Go right ahead, because we're gonna talk about all the matches anyway.
Okay, cool. So one of the main reasons why I liked it, some of the things were a little bit unpredictable, right? I had no idea the Usos were gonna grab the tag team titles. And if you've you know me, Lewis, I am a huge Uso fan, my friend. I think they are the best tag team in the company, period. Period. I love the gimmick. I love their chemistry is amazing because they're brothers and also they're fantastic in the ring. So that was really cool to see. The women's tag team match, I mean, it was historic. There were some good spots. I thought it was okay. I wasn't blown away with it for the women's tag team championships, but I thought there was they did some good stuff in that. So that was enjoyable. And the men's Elimination Chamber match was by far probably one of the best they've had in a few years. Just with the pure storytelling and emotional response to the crowd with Kofi and Daniel Bryan. I mean, that alone was was fantastic, my friend. Like, I really enjoyed that, and I can imagine how it was in person. So overall, I gave it a solid C plus, and we'll break down the matches each one. But overall, the show was a C plus. I it did some good things. It did some good things.
That was very well said. you're probably going to laugh at me. I would give it an A minus.
Whoa, Lewis, what the? An A minus?
Listen, this is coming from an entirely different perspective. I already said I don't know how it came across on TV, but in person, from my personal experience of witnessing the pay-per-view, having my son there, and we're all getting excited for every little thing. I was into every single thing on you because it was the first pay-per-view event with my son. So that's the perspective I'm coming from. I'm sure if I was sitting at home, I'd give it no more than a B minus, if I'm objectively speaking. But from my overall experience of the pay-per-view, I give it an A minus. It was fucking enjoyable.
Wow. So what did it for
And
you?
look, this is not an A minus comparing it to some of the greatest pay-per-views ever. Not at all. This is just an A minus as far as my experience with live events. I mean, if it's not an A minus, and it's at the very least a B plus, for sure.
Now, what caught your attention to get it to that? Was it the pure fan experience with your son, or did you actually see some things happen that you were like, oh man, this is solid?
It was the fan experience with my family. That was one thing. And then I also, like you had pointed out, I also really enjoyed the psychology and just the overall brilliant storytelling of the final sequence between Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan. That's one. I mean, well, that's the second thing. And then just another thing too was I thought it was a great start to the pay-per-view too. And I love how Sasha Banks and Bayley when they ended up winning the tag team titles and not Nia Jax and Tamina, but we'll touch on that in a bit. And I thought the match was fun. It may not have been as fun watching it at home on TV, but it was a lot of fun in the arena and the fans were into it. So yeah, and like you said, the Usos winning the tag team titles, yo, the crowd erupted. Like nobody expected that.
Yeah, I was that threw me off, and I loved it, because I mean, come on, I mean, is it really believable that Shane McMahon is beating up the Usos, and that's a credible partner to beat one of the greatest tag teams of all time? Like, to me, that just wasn't believable. So I'm glad they didn't run with that, because that wouldn't have made any sense to me. With Shane pinning an Uso. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Usos have beaten greater tag teams and they lose to Shane and The Miz. It wouldn't have made sense. But they did their thing as far as the match is concerned. I mean, Shane, hit his crazy spots. But I mean, overall, I mean, I didn't hate anything about, like, usually I would say something I hated about the pay-per-view, but I think oh, I did hate one thing, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. I did hate one thing, but we'll talk about that later.
We'll definitely get into the specifics. Let me give the listen a few comments. So we'll be right back. All right, so let's start this match by match review. So the opening match, you have the Elimination Chamber for the first ever, well, to crown the first ever women's tag team champions. You got Nia Jax and Tamina, Sasha Banks and Bayley, the Iconics, the Riot Squad, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, and Naomi and Carmella. Am I missing anybody? I think that was it, right?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna go by the eliminations and of what order of who was eliminated, but in a nutshell, Sasha Banks and Bayley win the tag team titles. The obvious choice going into this match, judging by the way everything was being booked, storyline wise, week by week, was Nia Jax and Tamina walking out the tag team titles. But I said to myself for the entire week leading up to the pay-per-view that wasn't going to be the case. I'm like, okay, yes, there's a good chance that they may win the tag team titles, but a part of me feels like it's just way too obvious and way too predictable. Mm-hmm. And we're probably going to see either Sasha Banks and Bayley or a dark horse team win. And lo and behold, Nia Jax and Tamina weren't even one of the final two teams.
Yeah, you know, I do agree with you that it would have been a little bit too obvious to throw them on Tamina and Nia Jax. But I felt the same way about Bayley and Sasha, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was going to be a little too obvious to throw it on them. Because to be honest, the way all of this shaped out story-wise was that those were the two teams that would possibly hold these titles. Those were the two teams. It's going to be either Nia and Tamina or Bayley and Sasha. So it just worked out to be that the babyfaces took it. Bayley and Sasha, I mean, you know, they're the babyfaces of the women's division. So you figure they're going to hold it first, right? I would have loved to see, and I thought they were going to do it. I thought the company was going to go for it. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I thought for a little bit, Lewis, that we were going to see a major upset and that they were going to hold those titles for the first time. I actually believe that. From the way they were looking, the way they were booked into this, their strengths with each team, I thought they were going to do it. I thought it was going to be that way. But we got Sasha and Bayley instead. And I was happy. I was still satisfied with it.
Yeah, so was the arena. They were super into Sasha Banks, bro. I don't know how it came across on TV, but they were really into Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks, I think in that match she had the...
Oh, wow, really? See, I couldn't tell that watching that at home. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, the loudest negative reaction, or I guess the biggest heat, definitely went to Nia Jax, for sure.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. No, overall, I thought it was a good match. I thought it was really fun. It was a big... choreographed in the beginning, and certain spots, just, you know, Karen and I look at each other and we were like, that was such a bullshit spot. But overall, I thought it was a very good way to open up the pay-per-view, to get the fans excited. And you know what? The right team went over. So I other than those minor issues, I thought it was a solid performance. All the women busted their asses. Although I do have to say, I hate the way some of these women sell their... Like, I'll give you an example. Sonya Deville cannot sell for shit. I think she's pretty good, but she cannot... She does a horrible job of selling. I think it's a timing issue with her. She's not timing the way she receives the attacks and the strikes. She just doesn't really sell well. Neither does... who is the Harley Quinn chick? I'm
drawing a blank. Liv Morgan.
Liv Morgan. Yeah, she's another one. She is terrible when it comes to selling. And look, the Iconics have the same issue too. That's why the Iconics are not really that good in the ring. But what gets them over is their mic work and their personas. So some of those women, they definitely need some work, man. They need some tuning.
No, I totally agree. It's funny you said that because I noticed that the selling of a lot of these spots were a little off. Like you said, Lewis, I enjoyed the match. I thought it was a little clunky here and there. Sometimes I thought it was a little messy as well. Like there was a lot of things that weren't smooth. A lot of the hits that were a little faded. Like there was no, like they looked phantom. Like, you know, like it wasn't even any contact really.
That's what I'm talking about. And seeing it in person, it just makes you, that's why Karen and I periodically were just looking at each other like, Come on, man.
Exactly. But I do agree that they worked their behinds off, man. I mean, they really worked. And you could tell that they were really trying to put on a great match for this first ever inaugural tag team title, women's tag team title match. So I give them that. But there was just a couple of things that just kind of, I don't know, it didn't it didn't do anything for me. It didn't further me caring about it. Towards the end is where it started to pick up. I was getting hyped because I was like, yo, this may be, they may do Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I mean, I was so sure of it. And then they, you know, they go with Sasha and Bayley and they twist you around and make, and they grab the titles. And I was not mad at it. I wasn't mad at it. So, good for them, man. Good for them.
Well, I want to say this. I do like the way the belts are designed. Oh, yeah. I think those are really, yeah, they're not corny looking like the women's titles. The women's titles just basically look like spinoffs of the WWE and Universal Championships, like no originality whatsoever. Like this actually has its own unique original look to them. And I thought that, you know, kudos to whoever designed the belts. That's one thing. Another thing is, did they ever specify how title defenses are going to work?
Very good question. Because I was...
Are the champs supposed to be on both shows now?
Lewis, I am assuming that has to be the way it's going to work out. Because, I mean, they got to defend it with the other tag teams on the show. On the other show. So,
right.
Yeah. Unless... Who knew? I was reading a bunch of things tonight on some sites that there's big announcements or something big's going to happen. I don't know. I haven't watched Raw yet, but who knows? Maybe there's a shakeup. I don't know. But my assumption is that they're defending those titles on both brands. I mean, I don't know how else you're going to do that because you have to. You can't make tag team titles for two different brands. That's an overkill. So they got to defend it on both brands.
I will hate it, absolutely hate it, if they end up splitting both tag team divisions and coming out with a set of SmackDown women's tag team champions. I would hate that.
Yeah, that should not happen. That should not happen.
There's only so many, you know what I'm saying? There's only so many teams you can do that with. I think just have the champs appear on both shows. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the way the Undisputed title was circa 2002 before they brought back the world title.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, there's, like you said, there's only so many people you can create tag teams with. I mean, for Christ's sake, they put Carmella Carmella and what's her name are now a tag team.
Naomi.
That's, thank you. Naomi. Now a tag team. And actually, they work. I actually like them as a tag team. They actually work. They both dance. They're both ex-dancers. They have this hyper energy that they can get the crowd riled up. It actually worked. Naomi is the better wrestler, but I think Carmella brings a sort of deeper, more personality to a tag team with them. So I thought it worked, but I mean, you can't create tag team championships for SmackDown and Raw. You just can't. So it'll be more enjoyable if they are splitting between brands. It'll be more enjoyable that way.
Yeah, one can only hope, but this is WWE at the end of the day.
Exactly. You are right.
they're pros at disappointing the fans.
Yes, they are. They are masters of that. Yes.
Now, speaking of tag team titles, the next match, the Usos finally regain after what, a year? They regained the SmackDown tag team titles by defeating The Miz and Shane. Now, this match was just okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just a serviceable match. I, you know, you had like two big typical Shane McMahon spots, you know, the table spot and the coast to coast spot. The table spot is actually really cool to see in person.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, because it doesn't look that far on TV, the turnbuckle post from the announce table, but that shit is pretty far, man.
Because on TV, yeah.
Anybody that's pulling off that spot, they gotta, they got to clear a lot of ground. Like that's a lot of airtime. So yeah. So in any case, when the Usos got the three count, I was like, I let out a holy shit! Like they won. I wasn't expecting it. I thought Miz and Shane were gonna retain.
Yeah.
Do some, you know, hokey business, but wow. You know, I was pleasantly surprised by it. And the arena loved it too, because the fans were indifferent. Miz and Shane are likable, I guess, to a certain degree, and the fans are into them, and the fans are obviously into the Usos. So they were kind of conflicted as to who to cheer for, but it went over well that the Usos won the tag titles. I guess the Usos aren't getting punished for Jimmy. Who was it, Jimmy or Jay, that got arrested last week?
Oh, was it?
I don't remember. I don't recall which one of them got arrested, but it was you didn't read about it?
No.
Yeah, this was on Thursday night, I think it was, like Valentine's Day. Uh-huh. Naomi and her husband, I forget who she's married to.
I think it's Jimmy.
Okay, so they were both driving home. They get pulled over by the cops for something. And the officer asks Naomi to step out the car because it reeks of alcohol. She's not drunk, but Jimmy Uso is, which is why he's in the passenger seat. So he's drunk, and he takes issue with the cop having to ask Naomi to step out the vehicle. So he gets out the vehicle, gets into an argument with the cop, and the officer arrests him.
Oh, shit. I had no idea.
Yeah, so that could explain why Naomi and Carmella were eliminated first in the chamber match.
That makes
sense. Well, apparently it had no effect on the Usos because they fucking winning tag team gold 2 days later.
Listen, man, well, good for them because you're right. The match wasn't that great. I don't know about you, Lewis, but I kind of don't care about seeing Shane in the ring anymore. I just don't care. I mean,
I don't care either. I think the spots are, that's it. I'm kind of over it. Like, yeah, it's nice to get the little cheap pop, but dude, you don't have to kill yourself anymore. We know who you are. You're Shane O'Mac. You're the crazy son of a bitch that's not afraid to jump off 75-foot structures. You don't have, like, you're taking away ring time from people that deserve that TV time and pay-per-view time. I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
I agree, man. I and every time Shane does one of these spots, I almost feel his body in pain. Like he looks visibly hurt. And I'm like, damn, Shane, you do not have to keep doing this, my man. Like, just do a couple of major pay-per-views a year. That's all you need to show up on. But I don't care about his quest to be a tag team champion. It's not interesting to me. I don't think I'm the only one that feels this way. I mean, I don't know. I just didn't care for it. And I'm so glad that Usos got those titles, man. I was very happy. It sounded like they got a good pop from the crowd. And dude, they're just so good. They're so good.
Oh yeah.
And they work amazing together. The timing, the accuracy with the super kicks, that super kick that Shane took from the other side of the turnbuckle, like that was good. And it's believable that Shane and The Miz would lose to them versus The Miz and Shane going over. Like, I don't know. It's just not believable to me. So I respected the choice of throwing those titles back on them. Good choice.
Yeah, it was a good choice. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that their contract is up in April. And unless the listeners have been living under a rock, there's a certain company called All Elite Wrestling who has been racking up on talent as of late.
Mm-hmm.
And with that said, Vince McMahon and company are probably shitting their pants as to whose contract is going to be up in the near future, because they may not want to re-sign with WWE. They may want to go to the competition. Now, AEW is not going to be direct competition per se for WWE because WWE obviously has tons of more money. But you cannot underestimate what All Elite Wrestling is doing right now, especially considering they have names like Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, Pentagon and Phoenix. You know, it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So I know for a fact that that's on McMahon's radar. So he said, you know what? The Usos are like, that's our prized possession. They're WWE homegrown talent. I'll be damned if AEW takes them. Because there's a good chance that Dean Ambrose might end up on AEW. So he said, he probably said, you know what? Let's just put the tag titles back on them and see what happens. Maybe that'll persuade them to renew their contract when it's up.
I mean, that's a good point. That's what WWE is probably going to have to start doing with a lot of expiring contracts. As soon as AEW inks a TV deal, you're talking. They're now competitors, bro. Even if it's on like a Netflix or an Amazon or whatever it may be, those are also options. That's competition, and apparently AEW. They got some, you know, the owners. I believe he's the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, I believe.
Yeah. It's the Jaguars.
He's a billionaire, has lots of money.
He's got money, in other words. So he's got plenty of money to fucking throw around. So if they need to shop a TV deal, they'll make it happen. Rumor has it that Time Warner is in the running. Mm. I don't know how accurate that rumor is, but it could be possible that by the fall we'll see them on TV. And imagine if they land on TBS or TNT. Oof. It's huge.
We got Monday Night Wars all over again, man. That would be amazing. Yeah,
absolutely.
This is what WWE needs. You know what I'm saying? They need a spark under their ass to start really being creative, and really respecting their talent, man. I mean, and letting their talent be talent. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't script everything. You got to let the talent go out and do them and be the characters that they are, right? Because when you let them be those characters, it comes off more natural and believable, and you tend to want to listen more of what they got to say. But when you script it, it's sort of like, okay, this person doesn't believe a damn thing they're talking about. They literally must have gotten they must have gotten the script 5 minutes ago, and you don't care. So I believe, and the rumors I'm hearing is AEW is going to allow their performers to have a really big hand in the creative of who their characters are. And I believe that is going to be a major selling point to a lot of these wrestlers in WWE. They already made the money in WWE. Now they want to, be creative and create something that's going to be forever remembered. And, I can't wait, Lewis. I want some shuffling, man. They need some spark, because they've been real on cruise control for a long time, man. So I hope AEW works out. Get that TV deal.
Yeah, every person who's associated with the industry, every fan who loves pro wrestling is rooting for AEW. And the reason why is because competition is a good thing. It is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. AEW is not going to put WWE out of business. But like you said, it will light a spark or a fire under their asses to get their shit together, because they're not the only ball game in town. Kenny Omega, he even said it himself. I mean, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said, but he basically made the point that it's incredible to think that no one could be successful outside of WWE. Because the common perception for years has always been, you ain't shit unless you've had a run in WWE. That is becoming the case less and less as time goes by. Mm-hmm. As the years go by and all of these independent workers are gaining more clout, and all their matches are going viral and everybody's out there seeking them, it's like, yo, not the WWE isn't the be all end all. New Japan is thriving. Ring of Honor is thriving. And now when you're gonna put AEW out there, and they got a load of talent, and they're actually presenting wrestling as a sport,
right?
Like the way they used to do back in the 70s and the 80s. You know, it's gonna be presented as a sport and not so much sports entertainment with all the fluff.
Right, right. And I respect that, and that's gonna be exciting to see, man.
Yeah, I'm super excited, man. Yeah. What I not so excited about is the fact that Finn Balor in the next match wins the Intercontinental title from Lio Rush and Bobby Lashley in a 2-on-1 handicap match. That was another surprise.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, the third consecutive title changing hands, and everybody, Finn Balor was super over, obviously, with the live crowd. But nobody expected him to actually win the match because they figured this is Finn Balor. Save an Intercontinental title win for WrestleMania, maybe, you know, on the grandest stage of them all, have a bigger platform. When he fucking hit the coup de grace and got the 3 count, I said, whoa, I was excited. But at the same time, it's sort of disappointing because you gave him the Intercontinental title at Elimination Chamber?
Right.
In a so-so match?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because the match itself was just okay. You know what
it
I mean?
It was like okay.
It's not anything that you couldn't have seen on Monday Night Raw, but it was just very puzzling. I'm happy for Finn Balor, for the fact that he finally got a singles title again. I just felt it was so anticlimactic, maybe.
Okay. I see. I totally agree with you. I personally thought the Intercontinental title on Bobby Lashley was pretty good. I enjoy Lio Rush. I enjoy Lio Rush a lot. And maybe that's why I enjoyed it on Lashley, because Lio is basically the mouthpiece for Lashley. And he gives Lashley this sense of being bigger than what he, or better than what he really is. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that manager and wrestler kind of dynamic they got going on. Lio in the ring is really good. Like
he's a good worker. He is.
He's a hell of a worker, man. Hell of a worker. Great on the mic. Great emotion and great facial expressions. Like, he's pretty damn special. And I heard Vince is really high on him. Like, Vince really likes him. Which I don't doubt that Vince likes him. But Finn getting the title, I don't. You know, Lewis, when that happened, I was like, okay. There was nothing special about it. Like, you're right, it was anticlimactic. Unless they got something big planned for Fastlane, maybe it's probably going to definitely be a rematch, or maybe Lio versus Finn Balor. That would be interesting for the title. I mean, who knows, right? That would be an interesting angle to go. Because I think those two would have a really dynamic, fast-paced, high-flying match. So that would be interesting. But I don't know what this does for Lashley. What do you do for Lashley? Do you throw him into the heavyweight contention now? Like, do you flirt with the whole him and Brock? Like, what do you do from here? But I don't know. I don't know. I didn't care much about Finn winning it, man. It didn't feel special. It didn't feel special. That's what it was. It didn't feel special enough.
I'm totally on board with you. It felt special to me because I paid money for my ticket, so
right.
I want to see some title changes.
Yeah.
I want to see some surprises, so I was fine with it. But no, if I was sitting in my living room, that would have been a head scratcher for me.
Right.
Personally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, you know, it was what it was, and then Lashley turns on Lio Rush, and we'll just see what happens going forward.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know what they're gonna do. I mean, I don't know.
Well, stay tuned because we're going to go into the second half of the pay-per-view. All right, welcome back. And, you know, at this point in the night, well, from my perspective, you know, we're having a good time. And I'm like, holy shit, three title changes. Are they going to flirt with Daniel Bryan later on tonight, actually losing the WWE title? Or even Ronda Rousey winning, I mean, losing the women's title?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing that came across my mind. So now we have Rousey versus Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott, I've been very high on since her NXT days. She's got the perfect look. She can work. I think it's only a matter of time before she breaks the glass ceiling.
Lewis, I like me some Ruby Riott too. I totally agree. But I thought she looked like complete trash in this match. She looked. They squashed her, man. And they squashed her in a very... hurtful way towards who she... or to the development of her character. I thought it made her look weak. I thought it was like them feeding her to Ronda. There was sort of zero offense. She looked scared. Like, it was just really weird. She's supposed to be this badass against the grain chick, and that she would take on Ronda and be the anti Ronda and all this stuff. But instead, she looked like some jobber from Houston, like that just came out and was there to, and was there to perform the squash, while Ronda came out in her Sonya Blade outfit. And all this stuff, like they pushed it. Oh my God, she's the voice of Sonya Blade in Mortal Kombat 11. And they made her this invincible character as she's coming out through commentary. So you already know right there that the diminishing of Ruby Riott was already in play. And when she gets out there, zero offense. It was just, I don't know. It was the most difficult watch for me out of all the matches, because I actually thought there was going to be semi-competition, like, you know, get some offense, get some, you know, have Ronda on the ropes a little bit, do some dirty moves, I don't know, but there was none of that. Like, it was a squash. I don't know, I didn't enjoy it at all. I didn't like it.
No, I hear you. Just because I was live in attendance, I didn't enjoy the match either. You know why? Because I'm eating, I'm like snacking on my food, and the minute I put my head up, she's tapping out. And it's like, what the fuck was this? Like, it's exactly. Like you said, completely diminished Ruby Riott's character.
Yeah.
And if you're going to have somebody fed to Ronda Rousey, why couldn't they just have somebody else in this position?
Right.
There's a lot of women to choose from. You could have fucking put Sarah Logan or...
Yeah.
I don't know, but like at the expense of Ruby Riott, right. I wouldn't think that at all. And you know what? The writing's on the wall for Ronda Rousey's popularity, because she got a mixed reaction last night, and I'm pretty sure it came across that way on TV as well, right?
It did, but what did you hear? Was it more boos or more cheers? Like, what was it like?
It was kind of split down the middle, honestly. Okay. I was one of the people that was booing her. But, just to be a dick. But, I would say it was 50-50. And you know what? You could probably hear a little more negativity in the crowd than anything else.
Wow.
And that's not to say that Riott was super over, because she wasn't. But, the writing is on the wall, bro. That WrestleMania crowd at MetLife is going to destroy her.
Yeah, it's going to be...
If the Toyota Center reception was any indication, woo, she is going to get demolished in Jersey, bro.
Woo. Yeah, she's going to get it, man. like, it's going to be...
She better be fucking happy and she better be happy that Charlotte is getting inserted into that match, and it's going to be a triple threat.
Yeah, you think they're going to run with this triple threat?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the post-match segment, which, by the way, Becky Lynch got the biggest reaction of the night after, I guess, like, it could be tied with Kofi. But, yes, Becky, the hype is real, bro. Like, people are really into Becky. She's coming out in crutches, and, like, I'm getting excited. I'm fucking screaming like a bitch. Like, oh, there she is. You know, so.
But, like.
Yeah, and she, yo. Really whacking the both of those crutches. Like, I thought I was bugging when I saw a little red part around Ronda Rousey's head afterwards, but I read online that she actually cut her open.
Yeah, she busted her open, man. Like, Becky was going a little, she was stiff with those hits, man. Like, she was swinging the hell out of that thing. I mean, and I think she realized, okay, let me just kind of take it down a little notch. But I mean, dude, go. I mean, it's not like Ronda hasn't bled before, for Christ's sake. I mean, just go for it. Like, when you go for it. I mean, not like hit her with the crutch, hit her. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. I was one of those guys. Yeah, I was one of those guys who was. I think I even said it on your show. I was not high on Becky, man. I did not like me some Becky Lynch, but now. She's a freaking megastar, dude. And New York City, they're going to annihilate Ronda Rousey. She may cry. That's how bad it's going to be. She may cry.
Yeah.
And Lewis, think about this, Lewis. Think about this. My wife and I, we're planning to go to Raw after. We're going to go Raw, right? And...
Oh, wait. So you guys aren't going to Mania anymore?
We might not do Mania because I want to get decent seats, and I believe Raw, we could, price-wise, we'll get some decent seats for what I'm looking at. So, for our sake, where we're not going to get swallowed by the MetLife Stadium, like, up in the bleachers somewhere, I'd rather be at Raw. But, Brooklyn, Ronda music hits, that's going to be another night of booze, man. She's going to get killed. Like, it's going to be awful. I can't wait to report that back to you, man. I'm going to report that back. Let you know the
booze. Oh, yeah. That, you know something? Now that you mention it, that week, we're going to have to actually do more than one episode. Because going to have to do our reactions to WrestleMania. And then we're going to have to do our in-person reaction to NXT TakeOver. So, listeners, if you're not aware, Keyote and I'm actually flying out to New York. So, Keyote and I will be in attendance for NXT TakeOver that weekend.
Yes, sir. It's going to be great. Can't wait.
Yeah, so we're going to have to bust out two episodes, bro.
Yeah. Double duty, man, because... I
hell, maybe even a third episode for the Raw after.
Well, we're gonna have to do the Raw after. We have to. Gotta do the Raw after.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't wait. That's gonna be a great weekend.
Yeah, so I mean, the crowd ate it up that whole segment. It was a nice cute little segment to further the build up, but my only thing is I hated the fact that she's able to just walk into the arena, attack Becky Lynch and Charlotte, and get escorted out. Mind you, 6 days ago, she got suspended for 16 years. How is she even allowed into the building? You're thinking from a logical standpoint. If you're suspended, how the fuck do you gain access into the building?
Yeah, exactly. You're very right.
And let alone her getting into the ring and... As this onslaught ensues, like, nobody comes out until, like, much, much later.
Yeah.
I just thought it was very inconsistent storytelling.
You're absolutely right. It took forever for anybody to come out of the back to even stop it. I mean, for Christ's sake, she broke two crutches and took down two people while in the ring. And it took maybe, a few minutes for somebody to actually come down. Where was Finley when they needed him? Like, where was Finley? Finley couldn't come down. He could come down even faster. She not only gets into the ring and beats down two people with a crutch, but she, like you said, walks through the building, through the crowd, and into the ringside area on crutches. and no one stops us. No, like, logically speaking, if someone got suspended at their job, your face is on that computer as do not enter. If you see this person, call the police, like that sort of thing. But no. Not Becky. Becky's in a giant ass arena and somehow makes her way through the crowd and beats down two stars. Like it just not realistic. You know what I'm saying? Just, I don't know. It's just me. I don't know.
That's the kind of shit that makes the general public look down upon wrestling fans. Because they'll look at it like, this is what you're into. This is the kind of bullshit that you watch. Seriously, man.
Yeah, man, where's the damn security? Like, what happened?
Yeah, it was stupid, but hey, you know what? Again, another reason why I got my money's worth.
Exactly. No, so far so good for you on the show, man. So far so good.
I know. Now, I got a funny this next match. So, Braun Strowman loses to Baron Corbin in a no disqualification match with the help of Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. And was anyone else out there?
No, it was just them. Drew, Bobby, and then yeah, Baron Corbin.
So this is what happened. I actually missed the majority of the match because 2 minutes into the match, Tate decides to, you know, just nibble at his finger. You know, toddlers will be toddlers. And he kind of peels a little bit of the skin of his index finger back. And he's just like whining and crying. He needs a Band-Aid. So I'm like, fuck me. So let me just get up and try to see if there's I can get a first aid somewhere. So I had to talk to the ushers and explain the situation to them. They had to guide me to the other side of the arena to see if there was a first aid station open. And meanwhile, I'm hearing all the commotion and I hear the table spot, but I don't actually get to see it. Oh. I finally get my hands on some Band-Aids. And then when I come back and the match is already done.
No, man.
Now I'm telling Tate, do not bite on your finger. Like, I'm just glad that he did it during a match that I didn't care about, because I would have been pissed if he had done that during the main event.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I have no feedback on the match itself. Like, I missed the match completely.
The match was pointless. This was another one for me that I really didn't care about. What I do not like, Lewis, is Drew McIntyre associated with any Baron Corbin or Bobby Lashley. Drew McIntyre needs to be an entity of his own. He needs to be alone, developed, and shot up to championship contention quick, right? The more you put him in these type of matches or which I hope is not a stable, of Bobby Lashley and Baron Corbin, like that diminishes McIntyre's whole persona of being this like against the grain badass, like warrior, like the Scottish psychopath, like all this stuff. Like I don't care for him to be associated with them. What he needs to be doing is being in meaningful matches and holding some gold or being close to getting some gold. And keep having him talk because he's amazing on the mic. He needs to be developed away from that, because then you start putting him in like Dolph Ziggler territory, where Dolph was put with Drew McIntyre to kind of elevate Drew in some way, but really it sort of elevated Dolph. So I don't know if maybe they're using Drew to elevate Bobby and Baron as these badasses, or are they thinking that Bobby and Baron could some type of elevate Drew? I don't know, but Drew needs to be on his own. I don't want to see him do any tag team work. I don't want to see any of that. Drew needs to be shot up. I'm high on Drew, if you can tell. I'm high on Drew.
Oh, yeah. I'm sipping the Drew McIntyre Kool-Aid myself. I'm very big on Drew McIntyre as well. And I couldn't agree with you more. I absolutely agree 100%. He needs to stop being in these bullshit feuds. He needs to stop being associated with essentially mid-carders, because mm-hmm. that's what Baron Corbin and Bobby Lashley are. You're right. He needs to be an entity of his own. He needs to be in individual matches. He needs to be contending for titles. Even if he's not in the direct main event scene, he needs to be going after the Intercontinental title. You know, stuff like that to build up his repertoire, but to build up his status.
Yeah.
As he moves up in the card. Now, what's the end game for this whole storyline? I don't get it. How many times are we gonna see Baron Corbin versus Braun Strowman?
Right.
What is? I don't know where this is supposed to lead to. Is it leading to some type of big six-man tag at WrestleMania? Is it leading to Drew McIntyre versus Braun Strowman? I don't know.
Honestly, man, I think they have done Braun Strowman a major disservice. He's slowly getting into the abyss of being a mid-carder, right? Because do you really care about Braun Strowman anymore, right? Do you really care about his story or what? What meaningful storyline has he been in since the whole Brock debacle or that whole Brock match, right? Like, what has he been in that people have actually cared about? And I think...
Nothing.
And I think what's happening is you're seeing writers not know what the hell to do with him. That is what's happening. We can't put him in main event because we already got our main event for WrestleMania. We have to drop him down to mid card because that's the only spot we have for him. But if he's in mid card, who's going to feud with him that people would believe or that's a credible opponent? Or a story, doesn't have to be credible, but a story that we care about. Like, what are they gonna do with him? And I think the only thing they have an idea about is throwing Drew in the mix and Bobby, and basically those are your heavyweight mid-carders right there. So what is it gonna be, like you said, a six-man tag? I don't know what the hell they're gonna do with him. I think he is, he's starting to get into that zone of slowly being forgotten or turning into a ridiculous comedy act or being dropped so into mid-level or mid-card that no one's really going to care about him anymore. So he's in a very dangerous place, and I don't know what he can do to get out of it. Don't know.
You know, I'm going to counter that point because I just thought of something. You know, I don't think he's going into dangerous territory. I do think they dropped the ball on his momentum because he was one of the most over baby faces of the majority of the 2018. And then all of a sudden they turned him into a heel just to turn him face again. And I think that definitely ruined his momentum. However, I think it's safe to say that he may just be the new Kane of WWE, where, you know how Kane, okay, when he first debuted, he was this badass demonic heel feuding with his brother. They gave him the title, even if it was for a day, you know, because he was in main event feuds and whatnot. But they kind of demoted him back to mid-card for a little bit during the Attitude Era, and then put him back into main events, back to mid-card, back to main events, had tag team titles, hardcore titles, intercontinental titles. So Kane was always in and out of the main event / mid-card scene, but he was over with the fans, and he was one of the more well-known characters of WWE at the time. And he had crazy longevity because that's just how athletic he was for a big dude. Braun Strowman could possibly follow in those same footsteps, where he's obviously got the look and he connects with the crowd. So, you know, he may just be in like a mid-card limbo, but he might just be right back in the main event scene before you know it. Who knows? But if he has the same type of longevity that Kane had, he could be, he could have a career that's very, very comparable to the Big Red Machine.
You know, now that you said that, that makes sense. I mean, I can see that. I can see that. My concern is that he's such a dominant force. There was a period of time where Braun Strowman was so over that it almost was like, okay, we have to throw the title on this guy, like right now. He's so hot that we gotta throw it on him. But they dropped the ball with that. And ever since they dropped the ball with that, he's slow, and I can see where you would say the Kane level, but he slowly has just been dropping notch by notch, and not big notches, like just small baby notches down on his relevance card. Like, will it be easy to throw him back into a main event contention in your eyes, Lewis? Like, would it be easy to do that for Braun Strowman?
Yes. Okay. Because if I'm comparing it to Kane, I'm telling you, they did the same exact thing with Kane. I'll give you an example. WrestleMania 14, he's facing his brother in a high profile. You might as well just call that match the co-main event. A year later, he has a one-on-one match with Triple H. And Triple H, this, we're not talking the King of Kings Triple H, the Cerebral Assassin Triple H. We're talking Triple H, who was just freshly removed from D-Generation X. And with China, like that kind of Triple H, where he wasn't really a proven draw or anything like that. He was just coming up as an upper mid-carder, and they were kind of starting to build him into the main event scene, but not really, kind of flirting with it. But yes, it was that level of Triple H. The following year, he's in a fucking tag match. His tag partner is Rikishi, and they face Road Dogg and X-Pac. You get what I'm saying? Like, you know, and the year after that, he's in a triple threat match for the hardcore title. You know, so he was always thrust back into the main event here and there. And he didn't win another world title. Jesus, like 2010, maybe. But he always remained relevant, always. And I think you can do the same thing with Braun Strowman.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if that's the idea, that's the best course of action for him. But yeah, that, now that you explained it and broke it down, I could see that could be a road they go down with how they treat Braun. So I get it. I don't know which one I like better. I don't know if I like heel Braun or if I like babyface Braun. I don't know which one to me is more interesting. I just don't want them to turn him into some Kane experiment, but make him more of a comedy sideshow act where he's lifting trucks over his head and he's breaking homes with the swipe of his hand. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's stopping cars with one hand. Like, I don't want to see that shit. Because that, to me, as a logical human being, is not realistic. Like, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just hard to believe. And I don't know. It's silly. It's silly. So I want to see badass Braun, if they're going to do sort of a Kane road with this character. So we shall see, man. We shall see.
Yeah, we definitely shall see. And like, now that I'm thinking about Kane, we ought to do an episode just focus on Kane's career, because he's had quite a fascinating career, man.
Very fascinating. Yeah, very fascinating career.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, next up, we're going to give our thoughts on the main event for the WWE Championship. So stay tuned. Yo, before the main event, let me backtrack all the way to the pre-show, because I totally glossed over the fact that Buddy Murphy and Akira Tozawa put on a hell of a match for the Cruiserweight Championship. Oh. Holy fucking cow, 205 Live continues to get shat on by getting no love and no pay-per-view time whatsoever. They have just been permanently relegated to the pre-show. I mean, the live crowd was really digging that match. They worked their asses off every time. Buddy Murphy's so goddamn impressive.
He is.
I just think it's a shame, man. It's good for the live crowd, but the people watching at home, no one gives a shit, because that's how 205 Live has been presented.
It's unfortunate, but yeah, I agree. I agree, man. It's 205. If you were to lose a show on the WWE Network, it'd definitely be 205. There's even rumors of them just tearing 205 apart and just having those guys go on separate shows, like just splitting them up against all the NXT, SmackDown, Raw kind of thing. I don't know if anybody's even paying it. I was really high on 205, Lewis, for a while, but now I sort of just gotten like, okay. Like, if I see it, I see it. If I'm bored at home and I have nothing to do, I'll put it on. But it's literally the very last thing I'm going to watch on the network. So they just have not done a good job making it as important as NXT. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just have not done a good job promoting its stars, and making it relevant. And whenever you have a show like that, that's not a good sign, because that means no one's paying attention to it. So I don't know. It's so bad. I didn't even know they were even on the pre-show. So that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't even, who knew? Like, the crowd might've been into it, but is anybody else at home caring about it? Like, they don't make it careable. If that even is, the word doesn't even exist. I don't know. But who?
Hey, you're talking to the English teacher.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Who cares? Like, I don't know.
No, I agree with you. Let me get the record straight. I don't watch 205 Live. I really don't care that much for 205 Live. But ever since Buddy Murphy has retooled his character since last summer, I believe, I've been paying attention to their pay-per-view matches, their pre-show matches, and listen, man, they do their thing on the pre-show. Like, I literally go out of my way now for the pre-show just to watch these matches. But I don't watch 205 Live on a weekly basis, not at all.
Yeah.
but yeah, I'm totally down for it, because I know they're gonna bust their asses, because that's all these poor bastards have. That's the only spotlight that they really have.
Yeah. I totally agree, and it's sad that they're not getting they're not getting the looks that they should be. But I mean, I don't know, and they're really good. They're all really, really good. It's just they're not doing a good job making people care. You know, like they're just not.
Yeah, it's a shame, but in any case, Buddy Murphy retains the Cruiserweight title, and Hopefully he can actually be featured on the WrestleMania card, but I highly doubt that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to the main event. All I can say is this was so much fun to watch in person. I mean, this was such a great... Here's the thing. I don't think it's going to go down as one of the all-time great Elimination Chamber matches, but I will say this. It is probably going to go down as one of the most memorable in recent memory because of the final sequence.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a nutshell, it comes down to Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston. No one expected this, for the simple fact that Kofi Kingston already got his rub on Live a few days prior in the Gauntlet match. He had an incredible performance in that Gauntlet match, similar to what Seth Rollins did last year when he lasted 30 minutes against John Cena and another 20 minutes against Roman Reigns and like another 10 minutes against Elias. And that was like the beginning of the beginning of Seth Rollins' resurgence. They tried Kofi Kingston, and he was very over. It was very well received. And mind you, this was only because he was a replacement for Mustafa Ali. That was supposed to be Mustafa Ali's spot.
Right.
Yo, he does the same thing and delivers an incredible performance against Daniel Bryan. Yo, those near falls was so believable. Yo, I jumped out of my seat at one point when I thought that, what was it? I thought when Daniel Bryan hit the first running knee.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the match was over. When Kofi Kingston kicked out, the fans went nuts. They were like, holy shit. Like, listen, Toyota Center was super into Kofi Kingston. I mean, he may have gotten the biggest reaction of the night.
Wow.
After Becky Lynch, of course. But, yes, like, everybody was super, super into him. And this guy, this has to make you wonder how it would have turned out if Mustafa Ali was in the match. You know what I mean? Because I'm not saying that Mustafa Ali wouldn't have had an impressive performance, but he's still relatively new. Mm-hmm. Kofi Kingston made his main roster debut in 2008, bro. We were still at Purchase College.
Holy shit, you're right.
Yeah, he's been around for a hot minute. He's been around, he's like pre- WWE Network era. You know, when WWE first went PG, when ECW was still around as a developmental brand. So this is sort of like his crowning achievement. And, you know, of course, Daniel Bryan wins the whole thing and retains the title, but he gets a standing ovation. And if last night's performance wasn't an indication of him being the most popular member of the New Day, then I don't know what is. Now, here's my question to you, Kyode. Do you think that Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston for the WWE Championship is something that Vince McMahon is going to pull the trigger on for WrestleMania? And do you think that it's time to give Kofi Kingston the title? As in, give him his first world title reign?
Wow, those are very interesting questions, Lewis. The last sequence, like you said, I totally agree with you. It was the drama with the last sequence was so well performed by both men. I was like you in my house. I'm standing up like, oh my God, this is great. Great storytelling. You know what I'm saying? Fantastic. I'm just confused, Lewis, on where this came from. Where, all of a sudden, did the love for Kofi come from? Like, Kofi has been loved, but this, from the past two nights on, you know, SmackDown and now on the pay-per-view yesterday, I'm sort of lost on where everybody was, like, why is everybody jumping on the Kofi bandwagon all of a sudden? Like, why is everyone liking Kofi to the point where he is almost getting as big of a pop as a Becky Lynch, right? Well, we always knew Kofi was good in the ring. We just didn't know if he can hold up to being a main eventer. That was my concern. Can he be a main eventer? Now, your question, would Vince pull the trigger on a main event between Kofi and Daniel Bryan at Mania? No, absolutely not. What you possibly will see is a main event with Daniel Bryan and Kofi at Fastlane. That is a possibility. But at Mania, absolutely not. He will not be anywhere near that main event match. If we know Vince and we know his track record, what you saw last night was Vince giving him a chance and be like, listen, kid, you've been with us for 11 years. You're great in the ring. I'm going to show me what you got. Kill it tonight. Kofi killed it. And I think Vince will look at this as, you know what? Rematch, Fastlane. I think that's what you may get. But there will be no Mania between Kofi and Daniel Bryan. I cannot I cannot even see that for a New York crowd. Vince is thinking New York, MetLife Stadium. He's thinking way bigger. Even though the crowd has spoken. And I believe and Kofi and Daniel Bryan work really well together, man. Like Kofi smacking his ribs and saying, kick me again, pushing Daniel. That shit was so good. It was Lewis, it was as wrestling fans, old school wrestler fans, that was so good. Right? Like to see that. And Daniel being stiff with the kicks. Like it was great to see. I just can't see Vince booking a WrestleMania match between the two. I just can't. But Fastlane next month in about 2 weeks, absolutely. He may do it at Fastlane. But I can't see Mania. I just can't.
Those are all interesting points. I mean, you're right. Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan have amazing chemistry for some reason. And I do love the pairing. Look, the crowd has spoken, though. It wasn't just last night. On SmackDown Live, he was over like Rover during that gauntlet match.
You're right.
But here's my thing, though. If Vince McMahon is in the business of changing things and steering the direction of the company, especially seeing as how 2019 is a year with lots of other options for wrestling fans on the horizon, he may want to start paying more close attention to what the fans want. If the fans are into a certain character, regardless of how big it may seem in the grander scheme of things, especially with regards to WrestleMania in Vince's eyes, I think you just go with it, man. I think WWE's problem is that they fucking overthink it. Yes, I understand that Dan should have a bigger point. Who else is there? You tell me. They're not going to do Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles again.
No. No.
Unless they call somebody up from NXT and build them up in 4 weeks and have the mainstream audience accept that person in a matter of 3-4 weeks. Who else can Daniel Bryan have a title against that's really popular? Now, look, I do think that you may get a rematch at Fastlane and it might be like some sort of screwy finish, but I think they should go with it, man. I think they should go with Kofi getting one last opportunity at WrestleMania.
Listen, okay, so if that happens, then you shouldn't do it at Fastlane, then, because that means you're going to get three different pay-per-views with these two gentlemen ending the show damn near. We've already seen it, right? So it's either Kofi's going to get the rematch at Fastlane and that's it, or Kofi somehow gets the match at Mania by cutting a promo on Daniel Bryan and saying, listen, man, I almost had you. I want you at Mania, that sort of thing. Those are the only two options. I agree with you. WWE is way too safe. They overthink things and they don't follow what the fans want. And you're right, the fans have spoken. But knowing Vince and thinking like Vince, he does not give a damn. So I'm thinking he's the only other thing that would make sense is to me Fastlane, man. Give it to him at Fastlane, and then Daniel Bryan, I don't know, somehow wins it back at Mania, maybe in a triple threat with Kofi in it somehow. I don't know, but
no, that's I got one for you. Here you go, Mr. McMahon, Triple H, and Stephanie, and whoever runs creative. How's this for an idea? Luke Harper is almost coming back because he's almost cleared to wrestle. Have Luke Harper join the Save the Planet movement. Book a 6-man tag team match against the New Day at Fastlane. Then shortly afterwards, Kofi Kingston becomes the number one contender. Kofi Bryan, WrestleMania. I just booked the next 8 fucking weeks for you.
It is not that hard. You literally just booked it. Hopefully Vince listens to this tomorrow morning.
It is not that hard. No one ever said that Daniel Bryan has to defend the title at Fastlane.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? First of all, I don't even like the idea of sandwiching so many goddamn pay-per-views in between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania.
I absolutely.
Like, one pay-per-view is enough, man. Why do you have to have another one? Fastlane, really?
Dude, it's the over...
All the focus from the creative standpoint should be on WrestleMania. Fuck Fastlane.
Absolutely.
If anything, Fastlane should just be some non-title matches just to beef up some storylines. Like, if they do exactly what I propose... Brian Harper and Rowan against the New Day, bro. That's it writes itself, and you can't sit there and tell me that the fans wouldn't buy Brian versus Kofi for the WWE Championship. You know what I'm saying? I mean, once upon a time ago, we all thought as wrestling fans that Big E would be the most credible person to win the WWE Championship, or at least be a contender. But judging from the fan reaction, look. Shawn Michaels wasn't the biggest person physically when he became the number one contender. He became WWE champion.
That's true.
You know, yeah. I'm just saying, like, Kofi Kingston has been busting his ass for years, and he's the likable veteran who doesn't, in any type of sports, who doesn't like to root for a veteran who has a great personality but has yet to win a championship ring. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, who wouldn't want to fucking root for somebody like that?
You make very good points, Lewis. Very good points. Listen, man, I'm with you. I would love to see. That's different. That's out of the box.
Listen, we need some change. Yeah, that's all it comes down to. We need change.
You're absolutely right, and that would be a huge thing. Kofi versus Daniel Bryan at Mania. I mean. That would be big. I just do not see Vince McMahon even thinking about that. Like, Lewis, if I see that in the next few weeks develop, I will be shocked, because then that means this ain't Vince. That means someone's forcing Vince to do this and is having him look at it in a different light. But you booked the next 8 weeks. I mean, you legit booked it. I mean, I would buy into that big time. I would so buy into that. I don't know what Vince would. And Vince thinks of Mania as the granddaddy of them all. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be main event after main event after main event, big star after big star. I mean,
listen.
I don't know.
For Vince needs to chill out, first of all, because WrestleMania sells itself. That's one. Mm-hmm. Two, you already have Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Ronda Rousey as the main event. That's going to close out the show. That's going to be the main event. You're going to have Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. That's a huge match on paper as well, because the storyline is that Seth Rollins needs to win the big one. He needs to overthrow the giant. I mean, you're going to have... Also, AJ Styles versus Randy Orton. That's seemingly what they're building towards. And that's an interesting match on paper as well. I mean, I don't know. I just think you have the star power there. You just have to utilize it. He's going to tell me that the New Day isn't over? Like, sure, you could say what you want that, oh, Kofi Kingston is not WWE Championship material. But sure, they said the same thing about Daniel Bryan 8-9 years ago.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? They look at when Bryan Danielson first came to WWE, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that he was going to be WWE champion, let alone headlining WrestleMania? No. You know, but you take a chance. Okay? When the fans are telling you something, just go with it. And look, if it doesn't work out and they notice that attendance is slipping, ratings are declining, then take the belt off Kofi Kingston. If they put the fucking belt on Jinder Mahal and had him hold the title for 7 months, you can easily put the title on Kofi Kingston.
Don't you?
I don't want to hear that shit, man.
Don't you?
Jinder Mahal was a failure. Dude, let's call it what it is. The Jinder Mahal experiment was a colossal failure. And I don't think Kofi Kingston, I don't think it would be that bad.
I think it would be pretty damn entertaining to see him and the rest of the New Day at you know, doing some type of promo with the world title. I don't know, being like, like they're in the kitchen making a batch of pancakes and Kofi drops the title. Like, I don't know.
I know.
It would be hilarious. Like, it would be really funny. It'd be different. And more, I would say entertaining. But Lewis, one thing I can't have you do. Don't you dare disrespect Jinder Mahal. Don't you dare.
Oh, guys, here we go.
Jinder Mahal. Okay, listen. It was a failure. I'm not gonna lie.
Of course it was.
I'm not delusional. I know that whole experiment was a failure. It had so much good potential though, but it was a colossal failure. So if they could take a chance with that, I agree with you, man. Listen, let's go for it. Mania in New York City, or Lewis. Maybe they do it on the SmackDown after. Maybe they let this ride. SmackDown after Kofi wins it. I don't know. Maybe Kofi will touch that title. You know, maybe Black History Month did something to Vince. I don't know. Maybe he was like, oh, you know what? When's the last time we had a black champion besides The Rock? You know what I'm saying? Like, when was the last time?
Mark Henry, probably.
That was it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was 2011. That was a long time ago.
That's a damn long time. So if you're gonna throw it on any black man who's in the company, I throw it on Kofi. You're right.
He was probably like, you know, Mustafa Ali is injured. So you know what, Kofi, you're up, and it's Black History Month.
Yeah.
So he's probably like, you know what, knock him dead.
I mean, I would love to see it, Lewis. That's a hell of a booking. That's very creative. It's very different. The crowd is hot for Kofi. You know what, Lewis? You know what I'm going to be? I have to watch SmackDown tomorrow and hear what the crowd does for Kofi then. And if the crowd is still hot for him, then I think it's something they're going to have to really highly consider. But if it was only
hot... It will be.
Okay.
They will be because that was such a great match, and it was such great psychology, and the emotions were at an all-time high. Yeah. And they show all the crowd reactions. That's like, how could you not? It's like the perfect. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if you call it an underdog story, but it's like the perfect everyman story. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel very confident in the fans' reactions towards Kofi. If they book this shit the way I just spilled it out, I might as well just work for the creative team. If they book it the same exact way, I will repost this episode repeatedly until I get some notice from WWE.
If that happens, you need to post it on the WWE, some site, I don't know, some type of fan posting site, I don't know. But,
you're gonna see my Instagram post like just with this podcast episode.
Listen, I'm so behind it, you have no idea. So I love it. It makes sense. It absolutely makes sense. So we shall see. It's different, and it definitely will gain, you know, some attention of some people. You know, people that probably don't watch wrestling on a normal basis, but, you know, they're casual fans and they see Kofi Kingston, who's probably a favorite of theirs. And it may spark something. It may be the new movement of Becky. Who knows? Maybe Kofi is becoming that guy. Like, you know, so I don't know. It'll be exciting to see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, even Karen, she really enjoyed the event as a whole, but she was really into the main event too.
Yeah.
You know, so okay. You know, so let's see. And again, she represents the average casual viewer.
Right. Right.
I mean, in reality, she can care less about wrestling.
Yeah, right.
But you know, if she's like just watching it for shits and giggles when I'm watching it, then yeah, you know.
Yep, that makes sense, man. Listen, if the casual fan can get into it, then maybe this is something they need to consider. I mean, it'll be exciting. It'll be different. It'd definitely be different.
For sure. All I know is that Elimination Chamber as a whole, from my in-person experience, like I said, I give it an A minus, no less than a B plus. And that's just me being there. That's my personal biased opinion. Now, I know you got the C plus. I probably would have given it somewhere along those lines too. But you didn't pay money for a damn ticket.
Yes, man. Yeah, you're there. So yeah,
Yeah, I'm there, exactly.
this show better be a B plus. I mean, if I'm paying for that ticket. So no, I totally get it.
Hell yeah. So our last topic is our thoughts on, it was just announced, our thoughts on D-Generation X finally getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So we'll talk about that when we return. D-Generation X is now 2019 WWE Hall of Fame. My thoughts, I thought it was long overdue. I would have thought that DX would have gotten inducted at least 5 years ago. I mean, their accomplishments as a whole, it just, I don't think it could be stated enough how important they were to not just the WWE or WWF at the time, but they were important to the industry in general during that time, especially during the Monday Night War. When you think of the Attitude Era, some of the people that you think about right off the top of your head are Stone Cold and The Rock, but you got DX is, they were one of the staples of the Attitude Era, man. You had everybody doing the crotch chop back in elementary and middle school. And the DX spawned the New Age. I mean, the New Age Outlaws were a tag team before they joined DX, but the New Age Outlaws were synonymous with their run with D-Generation X. And all the catchphrases and the merchandise. And it's crazy because you still see people with D-Generation X shirts and merchandise in at live events. So I thought it was long overdue. And it's well deserved, man. And they gotta sell tickets for the induction ceremony. So this will be, I guess this will be the headliner. What are your thoughts?
We spoke a little earlier today, Lewis, and I was a little, I didn't mind DX, but I thought it was a little soon for H to get in. But you brought it to my attention, Edge got in with what, after a year of being retired. So I don't mind, right? And you're right, DX had such a major impact on the shape of the business as a whole, to the edge, when you think of edgy and Attitude Era and all that came with it, you have your name, Stone Cold, you have, and then you have DX. You know what I'm saying? Like DX did everything but damn near shut the channel down. You know what I'm saying? Like they shut. Shawn Michaels. I mean, the whole, everything they did was amazing, and it is long overdue if you think about it. So, thinking about it as a whole, I'm honestly not mad at it. I think, and you're right, they do need to sell some tickets. And how do you sell tickets? You say that Shawn Michaels, Triple H, the New Age Outlaws, X-Pac, God rest her soul, China, all in attendance, people will buy. And this is New York City, you know what I'm saying? So there needs to be some major inductees. You get what I'm saying? Like, they're gonna have to, bring out the best of the best inductees that they could think of, because you're in New York, so you want this to be, you want this to be big. And what a better way to make it big by Inducting DX, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's funny? When it's all said and done, Triple H is going to be a three-time WWE Hall of Famer. DX, he's going to have a ring when he gets inducted himself, and he's going to have a ring with Evolution, because you know Evolution is going to get inducted one day.
Shit, yeah, I forgot all about Evolution. You're right.
Yeah, so he's going to end up being a three-time Hall of Famer. And this will be HBK's second Hall of Fame ring.
HBK's, wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. Well deserved, man. I mean, you know, the work speaks for itself. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's there, the DX was you know, what you would probably consider, like, you know, NWO territory for sure, you know, that changing of the business type of faction that creatively seemed to have a lot of power. Like, they seemed to have done creatively, it looked like they had almost damn near free reign. So,
yeah,
I mean, the titles they held, the individual titles, and collectively, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I'm just kind of mad that they're getting inducted before the NWO, but that's another topic.
No, yeah. But now, when you induct the NWO, who are you inducting?
I mean,
like, who?
The NWO, they had like 25 members at one point.
Exactly.
No, but I think when they get inducted, it'll be it'll be the founding three: Hogan, Hall, and Nash.
Hogan, Hall, and Nash. Okay.
Yeah. You know, that would make the most sense, and I'm pretty sure that's gonna happen sooner than later. If it doesn't happen next year, I'm sure within the next couple of years.
Do you think they?
Because you know those guys are all getting older.
Well, yes. And do you think they do that on the same show as the DX?
Nah.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Too many egos, and you don't know who. I know one is going to want to headline over the other. You can headline an induction ceremony with just the NWO itself, so.
That's true.
And just DX itself. I'm curious to see who else gets inducted this year in the coming weeks as they begin those announcements.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. I don't know who, you know, who. Do you think they go Rock? You think they induct the Rock?
This year.
Okay.
That was a big rumor. I'd be surprised, but I don't think so. I think they would want the Rock as the sole headliner because he's the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they would want DX and Rock sharing. I just don't see that.
Okay. Because, you know, you don't want them to. You're right. The Rock is huge, and you want him to have the headline. So that would make sense. I'm just wondering what kind of show they're going to put together for a New York WrestleMania, because this is big. You want big names, right? I'm trying to think of who's going to be the star inductee, like, you know, your celebrity inductee, like who. I honestly, I can't think off the top of my head who else could possibly be in it. I just can't think. I don't know. But
Undertaker? But you see, the DX thing threw it off, though, because if you know, again, Undertaker is one of those things where, like, he could just be the sole headliner without having to have DX. Unless they're really just trying to go all out.
Right.
Because if that's the case, then you can have Taker and DX.
You can. You can have Taker and DX. You can't have Rock and DX. I don't think you
can. Yeah, I don't know about all that, yeah.
I don't know if you could do Rock and DX.
Yeah, because The Rock is now Dwayne Johnson. Like, that name holds a lot of fucking weight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this isn't just a wrestler getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. This is a bona fide international box office draw.
That's true. I mean, yeah, The Rock, he'd have to be on a show of his own. Have to be. And we'll see, man. I think we're gonna see a decent. I feel, and it was rumored that people they were complaining, what's going on? No one's been announced yet to be inducted. It's not going to be that good. They're struggling to find people, all this stuff. But I think they got some big names under their sleeves, and as the weeks come by, we'll start to see those.
Yeah, we shall see, man. I think it's because they inducted too many big names over the past 10, 15 years. So that's what it is. They're essentially running out of names, and they're going to have to start digging out hats from the new, not the new school, but the those guys who made names for themselves over the last 10 years, as opposed to, or unless they're going to have to just keep digging and digging and digging back into the archives. But we'll see, man. I mean, the people that attend that induction ceremony, those are hardcore WWE fans because obviously on the other side of town, not even on the other side of town, but just I guess a few blocks away, you're gonna have the G1 Supercard, ROH and New Japan. So we shall see. But
That's
I'm
true,
gonna
man.
try to go to WrestleMania Access during that weekend because I've never
Oh, yeah?
been. Yeah, because I think the general admission is like $50 or something like that. I'm not gonna sign up for a photo op or anything like that when any of the superstars, but I'd like to just go just experience it.
Yeah, you know what? That's not a bad idea, man. I'm gonna listen. I'm still trying for that Mania. I'm gonna see what it look like. Make sure those tickets ain't stupid. I'm gonna try.
I'm
I'm gonna
sure they
check it
will
out.
be.
They will be. Yeah, I'm and I'm looking or I'm look. I was looking at them, and even the worst seats are like $350. So,
I know that's not worth it to me, bro. You're better off, like you said, going to Monday Night Raw the following night and just watching WrestleMania from the comfort of your home or
Yeah,
whatever. Because I'm gonna watch it either at a bar or my cousin's house, whatever. Like I'm not gonna go. I'm already attending two events that weekend anyway, so.
right. So I might have to do that Raw thing, my brother. Might have to do the Raw thing.
Yeah, and I would love to hear your feedback.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna listen out to the crowd. I'm gonna laugh when they basically crap the hell out of Ronda Rousey. It's gonna be Ronda may walk out. That's how deep it's gonna be. Ronda may walk out because you heard how she got flustered the first time. I mean, a New York crowd? Oh my God. Oh.
Oh no, it's over. We're gonna have a lot to discuss in the next 2 months.
Yeah, it's gonna be something else, man. It's gonna be something else.
For sure, man. Well, in any case, thanks so much for coming on as usual. This was a great, great, great conversation about Elimination Chamber, AEW. We even threw in some Hall of Fame talk. So we've covered a lot of different material,
Yes, sir.
and I'm always grateful to have you on, bro.
Lewis, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, so the next topic is either going to be a Fastlane review or we'll come up with another topic at some point. Maybe a WrestleMania prediction show would be cool too.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. It's good. We'll listen, man. This is WrestleMania season, my friend. Wrestling is all over the place, and we're gonna cover it all. We'll cover it all.
Absolutely. For you listeners, follow me on Instagram. I was about to say AYNE.
Oh.
Follow me on Instagram at Let Me Just Say This Podcast. And you can stream full audio on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, CastBox, Overcast, and all other streaming platforms. I appreciate the support, and please keep giving me feedback. And with that being said, we are out.
Have a good one, guys.
Have a good one, man. Peace.
Later.